And Happy New Year and welcome back to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want. Just don't call me late for dinner. Call me Baby New Year, I guess. And welcome back to the program. This is Subject to Discussion live in LVRocks.com. This is Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Pacific time in Las Vegas, which means it's 8 o'clock if you're in a mountain time zone in Denver, 9 o'clock if you're in a central time zone in Chicago, or 9 o'clock, or whatever the hell I'm at, 10 o'clock if you're on the East Coast in New York City. And tonight, Happy New Year. Hope everybody's had a joyous New Year. Nobody got any trouble with the booze or anything. The booze, broads, and booty, I guess. The three Bs. And tonight's guest, after the news to me and the news to you, will be Chip from PoliticalSports.com. He's got a unique website with a unique twist on political news done in a sports analogy, which is pretty cool, I think. And the website for the program is subject2discussion.com. And then beginning in the second hour, it will be Matt Sussman from blogcritics.org with our pop culture sports discussions, because we all sports until the last half hour of the program. And then ending the program will be Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica. And the series comes back on Friday with its new episodes. And also they have the sci-fi inside. It's like a new version of the lowdown they did last year for the series. So that's been aired Monday. I believe it's going to air again on Thursday. And then the email for the program is subject2discussion@lvrocks.com. And, of course, the program is podcasted right here on lvrocks.com. I go there and you click on podcasts and take you to where all the programs are podcasted from. And this is Subject to Discussion, brother. There you go. I could do it. It's more like Hogan and you guys. Con and Diggs do a little promo for Daily Noise. There's a little hard rock. More I'm like a Hulk Hogan type of a promo for the program. But anyway. And first of all, I want to update this mine collapse or explosion story. Apparently, they did pull a body out of the mine. Body found by mine rescuers. This is breaking news on CNN.com. One unidentified body found. No sign of 12 other miners. I was listening to the press conference as I was leaving. It came on right after Paul Azan got done, and right when Anderson Cooper was starting his show. And the man who runs the mining company, he said that they did not find the compartment that the miners ride in, and apparently the rescuers got down there, and the mining car was in good shape. It wasn't blown apart or blown open. So he's guessing that the survivors, or the people who were caught in the mine, actually got out of that mine car, the mine train, mine bus, whatever they call it, and they don't know where they're at though. So, but I just thought I would update that. No contact with miners for more than 35 hours. And one boy, he was on Paul Zahn's program. Name is last name is Helms. I didn't catch his first name. And he says he just wants to see his dad again. So, what a New Year's Eve gift to these families. Huh? Horrible. Horrible. So, but, I mean, it's the fragility of life, I'd say. You never know. You never know. I mean, those guys take the life. I can never work in a mine. I could never go down that low. How am I? 5,300 feet under the earth? No way. No way. So, but anyway, God have mercy on their souls, I guess should be the phrase. So, and then also I want to go through the news to me. It's a big story, but I mean I think we've been hit with that enough all day. We could go on to other things, and while keeping that in mind, it gives everybody a little bit of a distraction. Today, actually, I was on JohnDaly.tv. And now, John Daly used to do News 13 here in Las Vegas. Used to be the news anchor out here, and also he did Real TV, that program that was on for a couple of years, where they showed the tapes of the news footage and all that BS. Anyway, he's got a blog, JohnDaly.tv, and he said, which I like it. He says President Bush. This is from today. President Bush needs to take some advice from former journalist Mike Pottinger. Pottinger quit the Wall Street Journal to join the Marines. How about that? A 32-year-old could be in Iraq soon. Here's what Pottinger said about his decision to join the military in editor and publisher magazine. He said, quote, I would come home and you didn't feel coming home to the United States from abroad that we were a country at war, he said. I was surprised by that, and that disturbed me. It gave me a sense that we were being a little bit too complacent. And then John Daly ends this. He says, Mr. President, send us all to war. You keep saying we're at war, but you haven't asked the majority of us to participate and sacrifice even a fraction of what our troops do. All you said in 2003 was we should go shopping. Why don't you ask us to cough up more tax money, conserve gas, or donate to charities to help Iraqis and our troops and their families? Even a high school student naively left his safe home here to travel to Iraq to find out what is happening there. So I thought that was very interesting from JohnDaly.tv. He's also got a radio show, and actually I created a TV show with him that he produced a pilot for. Well, the damn thing never sold. You know, I thought it was an outstanding idea. It was a twist on the America's Most Wanted concept. It was supposed to be about missing people, called Missing in America, MIA. And it was a reality show, which never sold. So, you know, but you never know. Maybe someday, you know, I don't understand why not. I mean, it's a good concept. What the hell? You know, if America's Most Wanted could catch all these missing people, how about a show about missing people? You know, imagine, you know, they have it connected with the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You could have it hooked up. My idea was to have, like, little walls at Walmart with, like, who was on the program. It was a hotline phone you pick up, goes right to the center where you could, you know, alert people that they saw somebody in the store or wherever. So, but anyway, I thought it was a good concept, but it is yet to be sold. And also today we had Washington lobbyist Jack Abramoff made a plea deal. Now, this is supposed to open a whole new can of worms with the politicians in D.C. He makes a plea deal with the feds to cooperate with the feds in a case that could implicate as many as 24 members of Congress in both parties. Some have taken contributions from Abramoff firms, have returned the money. Others, like our own Harry Reid, Pinky as they call him, Nevada, claims he has done nothing wrong. So, and again, Jerry Doyle, he does a radio show from out here. He keeps calling Nevada, Nevada, Nevada. It's Nevada, Nevada. So anyway, and on Monday, I thought it was news that ice rink roof collapsed due to the heavy snowfall. And apparently there's still some missing bodies, missing people from that. And then what else? Saturday was New Year's Eve. It was a run-in with Dick Clark in New York City. I mean, you know, it's good to see him, but man, oh man, his voice, you know, I felt sorry for the poor guy. I mean, it's good he made such a comeback, but man, that voice, you know, but I don't know, but it's horrible. I don't want to get into it. It's terrible. Yeah, you know, it's nice seeing him, but again, it was sad watching that show. You know, it's like you're supposed to be celebrating New Year's Eve, and seeing him just made everybody sad. So, but and myself, I went to a first night type of thing out in Boulder City, so there's no alcohol. There's art and a carnival and things like that. So it was pretty fun. And then Friday on Your World Today was on CNN International. They had a story about the many who survived the Pakistan earthquake and are expected to survive the harsh winter ahead. Since the earthquake in Pakistan, there have been 2,000 aftershocks. So, I don't know. I thought that was interesting. And now we'll move on to news to you for today. And this is from today, from a study on MSNBC.com. Alcohol advertising promotes underage drinking. Alcohol ads have a direct link to 20% of America's alcoholic beverages consumed by drinkers under the age of 21, says a first-ever long-term study released Monday by Dr. Leslie Snyder, a Ph.D., at the University of Connecticut in stores. Published in July and in the January issue of Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine, the study contradicts former claims by the alcohol industry that alcohol advertising only affects those over the age of 21 and simply causes brand switching among the young drinkers. Ah, yeah, it was BS. I mean, what the hell? I mean, they advertise all these cool drinks. See some sexy chick drinking a drink. Definitely you're going to drink it, no matter how old you are. You know what I'm saying? Between April 1999 and January 2001, Snyder and her team interviewed 1,872 subjects between 15 and 26. While monitoring the 24 different media markets these subjects were selected from, they're interviewed on up to 4 different occasions, and the interviews found that for every extra alcohol advertisement viewed per month by an individual, their alcohol beverage consumption rose by 1%. There was no difference in alcohol consumption between those over the age of 21. So that I thought that was amazing reading that. They also revealed that in every one of the 24 markets, every dollar spent per capita per month on alcohol advertisements caused alcohol drinking among the interviewees to rise 3%. So subjects peaked at consuming 50 drinks per month by the age of 25 in heavy markets, where $10 per capita per month was spent on alcohol advertising. So I thought that was interesting. Amazing. Especially a lot of alcohol advertising is done in these college towns, too. So, and then I'm going to talk about New Year's Eve. I, it brings me up to the subject I want to talk about. We had the, I work, of course, everybody knows I work at, I'm back and forth between Caesars and Rio, but I was at Caesars for New Year's Eve. And then the Hilton family was staying there because Nikki Hilton was doing the New Year's Eve countdown at the Pure nightclub with her boyfriend, Kevin Connolly. And then Paris was doing her bit over at the Tao, over at the Venetian. Well, anyway, I guess Paris showed up at the club, Tao, with her boyfriend, Stavros, you know, the shipping magnate, the new one that's got more money than the other shipping magnate. And the club turned him away because he's only 19 years old. You know, at Tao, he had to be 21. All these clubs in Vegas, he had to be 21. Well, anyway, I guess Paris Hilton pitched a fit, but still the club wouldn't let her in because they've had problems before. The Venetian, I believe it was Venetian, had a problem a few years ago with Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake being in the club when they're underage, when they're 19. And 20, wherever the hell it was. So anyway, so Nick Paris Hilton didn't do the countdown in the damn nightclub like she was paid to. She ended up doing the countdown from the restaurant with her boyfriend. So I don't know. I mean, it was amazing. What they expect her to just let him in? I mean, you know, they knew the club and the police were sitting there ready. I mean, I don't know what they expect. So I thought that was interesting. And who else I saw? Oh, yeah, Stevie Wonder. I saw Stevie Wonder. Yes, that was cool. And because actually when I work at the his assistant called, and she goes, oh, I'm Stevie Wonder's executive assistant, and Stevie Wonder just flew. He wasn't expected to be in. He flew in for New Year's. And he's looking for a limo from the airport to Caesar's Palace. And I said, you got to be kidding me. On New Year's Eve? No, because the street's all blocked off. There's no way in hell he can get to the hotel. So I told her that, and she goes, well, do you have a helicopter? I'm like, we got a helicopter. Where will the damn thing land? On the roof? So, I mean, not even Celine Dion gets a helicopter to Caesars, you know what I mean? But anyway, they VIP services wind up getting him to the hotel somehow, some way. But he did show up. He ended up going and showing up at Pure at Caesars. And he wasn't on the guest list at Pure either, but they let him in to see them. Well, not him to see the – what? No, Stevie Wonder. Talking about Stevie Wonder. Not Ashley Simpson, no. Oh, I saw Ashley Simpson. That was a few months ago. This is Stevie Wonder. And they went to Pure to let them in, him and his wife come in to see the fireworks. So, interesting. I thought that was interesting. So, I mean to bring that up when I was talking about the New Year's Eve stuff. But this alcohol business tied in with the Paris Hilton business at the Tao nightclub at the Venetian. So, anyway, this next one is from Tuesday, from today. Did Virginia execute an innocent man? Where's this story at? With less than 2 weeks left in the Governor Mark R. Warner's term, time is running out for him to arrange DNA testing that could determine whether Virginia sent an innocent man to the electric chair in 1992. If the test showed that Roger Keith Coleman did not rape and murder his sister-in-law in 1981, it will mark the first time in the United States an executed person has been scientifically proved innocent. Say, there you go. There you go. Say death penalty opponents who are keenly aware that such a result could have a powerful effect on public opinion. No kidding. I don't know. A Gallup poll in October found that 64% of Americans support the death penalty as the lowest level in 27 years. So I really, you know, the death penalty, I really have a problem. We're the only industrialized country in the world that still has it. You know, and it's proven that, you know, the states with the highest amount of death penalty, people putting people to death sentences, the crime hasn't dropped. In some states, it's even gone up. I think Texas has got the most, and the crime has gone up the most in that state, and Florida. I'd say you let these people have easy about putting them to death. I'd keep them in prison the rest of their lives and build like a gulag up in Alaska and put all these murderers and child offenders and all this stuff up in these gulags up in Alaska. So, but anyway, that's my solution to it. It's also from today, from Mazda Automotive Group. They recall 2003 Protégés. This is from WFLD Fox News Chicago. Of course, WFLD means field broadcasting. It used to be field broadcasting. It was the Marshall Field family is actually the ones that started that station. Of course, they had the stores and all that stuff in Chicago and the Field Museum and everything else. So Mazda is recalling the 2003 Protégé because of potentially loose engine parts. Letters have been mailed to Protégé owners indicating that the screws got screws loose. The screws used to mount engine parts may become loose and fall out. Owners should contact a Mazda dealer for inspection. The company will fix the problem free of charge. I hope so. So all the Protégés all have screws loose. So anyway, next one is from actually also from today. A man allegedly steals hostess pie at gunpoint. It's a Twinkie or a ho-ho. A man accused of attempting to steal a hostess fruit pie with an air gun pistol at an Ann Arbor gas station in Ann Arbor, Michigan, was arrested by police Monday night. A clerk at the Clark gas station on 601 South Main saw the man take the fruit pie and try to conceal it at about 9 p.m., according to a report on the Ann Arbor News. The man then approached the clerk for a pack of cigarettes. The store clerk asked the man about the fruit pie, and the man revealed a gun, and the guy fled the scene. The man steals a fruit pie from hostess, or from the Clark gas station. Wow. And also, this is from today. Maybe it's a ding dong he stole, huh? Boxer Thomas Hitman Hearns faces assault charges. Former champion's son suffers minor injuries. Former boxing champion Thomas the Hitman, obviously Hitman, Hitman Hearns is charged with assault following an alleged altercation with his 13-year-old son at his Southfield, Michigan home on Sunday. Hearns, 47, is arraigned on assault and battery charges Monday, according to a report in the Oakland Press. Officers were called to Hearns home on about 7 p.m. Sunday on a report of domestic disturbance. The police said Hearns argued with his son, and the fight became physical. Hearns' wife also stepped in. I guess she was a referee, huh? And when there was a scuffle, the paper reported, the boy suffered minor injuries.
You are one pathetic loser.
There you go. Michael Buffer. Only thing you're missing that one is Michael Buffer, you know? Let's get I guess you can't say it because you get sued for like $1 million. The next one is from Tuesday, also from today. A musician and his family found slain in Virginia home. A musician, his family, and two young daughters are found slain in their burning home. They reportedly were bound with tape and with their throats slashed, police said Tuesday. It did not appear anything was stolen from the home where the bodies of Brian and Catherine Harvey and their daughters Stella, 9, and Ruby, 4. Oh, my God. Brian Harvey was a member of the local band called NRG Crisis and was a former guitarist and singer for House of Freaks, which has released 5 albums on 3 labels between 1987 and 1995. So, and also a family friend said the 39-year-old Catherine Harvey, get a little of this, she was the half-sister of Stephen Culp, who played Rex Vandekamp on Desperate Housewives, according to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. She was the co-owner of a Richmond toy and gift shop, yada, yada, yada. So, man, horrible way to go, my God. So, police not disclose the cause of death. Oh, well, I think the slashing and the having her throat slashed was the cause of death there. Maybe Einstein figured that one out. And this is also from today. This is from Vienna, Austria. Have scientists found Mozart's skull? Researchers say they will reveal the results of DNA tests on a skull believed to be that of Mozart in a film airing this week on Austrian television. It is a part of a year of celebratory events marking the composer's 250th birthday. The tests were conducted last year by experts at the Institute for Forensic Medicine in the Alpine city of Innsbruck. And the long-awaited results will be publicized in Mozart. The search for evidence to be screened by Sunday by state broadcaster ORF. I wonder if Geraldo is going to be hosting that one like he did the damn Al Capone's Vault BS in Chicago years ago. That was horrendous. Past test results were inconclusive, but this time we succeeded in getting a clear result. So I wonder if that will be Mozart's skull. The skull in question is one that for more than a century has been in the possession of the International Mozarteum Foundation in Salzburg, Austria. Shishi, the elegant Austrian city where Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was born in 1756. Wow. He died in 1791, yada yada, was buried in a pauper's grave in Vienna, St. Mark's Cemetery. Wow, that's a way to treat a legend, huh? Let me see here. What happened to the skull? How'd the skull wind up? Legend has it that a gravedigger who knew which body was Mozart's at some point sneaked the skull out of the grave. Through different channels, the skull, which is missing its lower jaw, came to the Mozarteum in Salzburg in 1902. Wow. That'd be interesting. Yeah, that's kind of cool. Actually, we had that problem in Chicago. That brings me back when Mayor Daley, Mayor Daley's father, the current Mayor Daley, his father, the boss, Daley, when he died, they had to put a slab over his grave because there was attempts to steal the grave of Mayor Daley, or the body of Mayor Daley out of the casket. So they had to put a slab over that grave there so nobody would steal it. What are you going to do? They felt that they're going to steal the body and hold it for ransom against the Daley family. So I was like, what the hell? Now, so they moved the grave of Mayor Daley to a little more visible place in the cemetery in Chicago. It's a Holy Sepulchre Cemetery. This is from Tuesday. Man, this is a story about that kid who went to Iraq. This idiot kid. Man helped Florida teen. Oh, dad. Dad helped Florida teen get Iraq visa. Faris Hassan, the Florida teen who sneaked off to Baghdad last month, is back with his family after an unauthorized 3-week trip to the Middle East. Hassan's father, Redya Hassan, a medical doctor, told CNN he had helped his son get a visa into Iraq from Beirut. The elder Hassan said he was leaving Iraq himself when the teen called, unable to get into the country from Kuwait. He told him to go to Lebanon, and he said he spoke with him almost daily. So he got into Iraq from Lebanon, apparently. And he said by the time he said his son had come so far by the time he called, he couldn't see helping him. It's smart. You know, let him into Iraq. You know, give him a chance to get killed over there. You know what I mean? Redya Hassan and Atiyah, who lives in Tampa, are divorced. Faris, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he's supposed to do a press conference today, and he never did it, I think, because he was getting, I think the kid was didn't want to be overshadowed by this mine business. So he didn't, last I knew, the son didn't do the press conference. So he's waiting until probably this mine business gets over with so he can get the limelight back. I mean, what is dumb kid going on? Where were the parents at, for crying out loud? You think your son's gone for 3 weeks? You don't keep track where the hell he's at? I mean, really. I guess they turned him into AP, and the AP sent him to the military, and they shipped him back to the United States. So it's also from today about those horrible rains in Northern California. Northern California cleans up after floods. The Groper-in-Chief declares state of emergency. Arnold's, I'll be back, baby, right? Hasta la vista. Homeowners shoveled away mud and other debris, and authorities worked to repair damaged levees Monday after a pair of storms flooded Northern California's wine country. The rain let up over the hard-hit region and moved into central and southern California, drenching the Rose Parade for the first time since 1955, and threatening mudslides on hills stripped bare by last summer's wildfires. So the Groper-in-Chief declared a state emergency in 7 counties, and initial estimates put the damage throughout Northern California at more than $100 million. And what else? The storms are blamed for at least 3 deaths. So, yeah, amazing. It was raining like cats and dogs here, too, for a few days. You know, I thought I saw Noah go by in his ark in front of Caesars the other night. But anyway, this is from Saturday. It's about that story from London about that rowdy passenger dumped on an island. Rowdy air passenger. There you go. A rowdy air passenger was cast away on a remote Atlantic island. Is that the island? Is that the island noise? Is that an island noise? I heard a bird. I heard a dog bark. I don't know. A rowdy air passenger was cast away on a remote Atlantic island after abusing crew. There you go. There's the plane. And other travelers aboard a holiday flight. The plane, boss. The plane. Smile, everyone. Smile. See, I can do Ricardo Montalban. Corinthian leather, too. Where are we? I lost my spot. Aboard a holiday flight from the UK to the Spanish Canary Islands. The pilot of the Monarch Airlines flight made an unscheduled stop at the Portuguese island of Porto Santo off the coast of West Africa, and the man became abusive after being refused more alcohol. I say you got to ban alcohol from these damn planes. I mean, what the hell? I mean...
alcohol is bad.
Well, I mean, either that or they should limit them like one drink on the plane or something, because they get liquored up. First of all, they get liquored up in the airport, and then they get liquored up on the planes, and then all hell breaks loose on the jet. You know what I mean? And I'd say, ban
alcohol is bad.
There you go. So the unnamed man, 53-year-old, was charged with disruptive behavior after police escorted him from the plane. So I need to dump him out some remote island somewhere. I don't know. Anyway, I don't think they'd be able to do that here in the United States.
So. Alcohol is bad.
Yeah, because how can a plane...
You can just suck my balls.
So how can a plane make in the United States make an unscheduled stop without all hell breaking loose? I don't think you can do that here. And then this is also from the International Herald Tribune on Monday. Story is going to blow up in the next few days. Iraqi clerics found on Pentagon payroll. Man, this is going to get worse. A Pentagon contractor that paid Iraqi newspapers to run positive articles about U.S. efforts in Iraq also has been compensating Iraqi clerics and scholars in return for their assistance with its propaganda work, according to company records and current and former employees. Lincoln Group, a Washington-based public relations firm, was told early last year by the American military to identify religious leaders who could help craft messages that would persuade Sunnis in violence-ridden Al Anbar province in Iraq. They wanted them to participate in national elections and reject the insurgency, according to a former employee. Since that time, the company Lincoln Group has enlisted three or four Sunni clerics and religious scholars to offer advice and write reports for military commanders on the content of propaganda campaigns, the former employee said. Documents and executives say the firm's ties to religious leaders and dozens of others of other prominent Iraqis is also aimed at enabling it to exercise influence in Iraqi communities on behalf of clients, including the United States military. Lincoln Group spent around $144,000 on Muslim scholars from May to September. Wow. It's amazing. Amazing. Spend all this money. I keep saying, send me some money. I could spend a couple million dollars. I'll say Bush is the greatest president of all time. Just give me a couple million. Hell. The next one was also from Friday from USA Today. Congress urged to raise the debt limit. U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow warned lawmakers that a legally set debt limit on the government's ability to borrow will be hit in mid-February and urged Congress to raise it quickly. Without Congress acting, it threatens to throw the country into its first default in its history. The administration says a debt limit of $8.184 trillion will be hit in mid-February. So that's all that. Who's going to pay those bills? Who's going to pay this debt off? That's what I want to know. You know? I think it'll be Con here or Diggs. Yeah, I mean, who's paying this stuff off? You know, I mean, we're not paying. You know, they do this BS about the we're giving these tax cuts, blah blah. You know, they would deficit. You know, I'm sorry, they do this deficit reduction. Oh, we cut the budget by $50 billion. Then they turn around and give these tax cuts for $60 billion. So it's a net loss of $10 billion. So where's the savings? Where's the fiscal restraint in this country? Like John Daly said at the beginning, you know, if we're at this in this big war, like Bush says, you know, why don't we all contribute? You know, raise the taxes. I mean, you know, why? Usually in the past, when we're the country's at war. First of all, the Congress has got to declare war, but you know, that doesn't stop anybody anymore. Usually the country is asked to sacrifice. You know, I remember my grandparents just saying when FDR was president that, you know, they wore bonds and they all cut back on fuel. They shut off the lights at 7 o'clock or wherever it was, and they all made a sacrifice for the war effort. Why doesn't Bush say conserve the energy, you know, don't drive as much as you can? I mean, do all this stuff. I mean, that's what I think. But anyway, who am I? This is also from CNN from Tuesday, from CNN Live with Kira Phillips. SUVs are no safer than cars for children. Kira Phillips, hot CNN anchor. She reported that a study has proven that SUVs are no safer in crashes than passenger cars. In fact, SUVs are more likely to roll over. I thought that was interesting. You know, that all these SUVs are supposed to be like the most safest things on the road, yet the studies are proving that they're more likely to roll over than automobiles. So, anyway, I see that Jeff is in the chat room. Welcome, the big goof. Where we are here? I'm trying to keep up with the chat room. Sorry, I've been Jasmine St. Clair. Hello. What are you talking about? You guys got to get Jasmine St. Clair. Jasmine St. Clair is an old friend of mine. Her and I bumped into each other literally at a wrestling event, her first wrestling event in Laughlin, Nevada, about, good grief, 8 years ago, I'd like to say. Those of you who don't know Jasmine St. Clair, she's a former porn star who is in the Guinness Book of World Records for... you put it delicately, the most sexual encounters in an evening. I think it was like 400 and something within a 24-hour period or whatever the hell it was. And so I met her. Anyway, she was nice. I mean, she wasn't as, you know, it was the first ever wrestling event, and the woman was scared out of her mind. And I was running the pyros there at the event in Laughlin. So anyway, so I told her, don't worry, you'll be fine. She went off and did well. So anyway, this next one was from a pack of angry chihuahuas attack officer. This is from Friday. A pack of angry chihuahuas attacked him. Where's your sound effect? There he goes. There he goes. That sounds like a poodle more than a chihuahua. Anyway, a pack of angry chihuahuas. Oh my God, what the hell is that one? A pack of angry chihuahuas attacked a police officer who was escorting a teenager home after a traffic stop. The officer suffered minor injuries, including bites to his ankles. No kidding. Detective Bill Veteran said that the five chihuahuas escaped the 17-year-old boy's home and rushed the officer in the doorway. The teenager had been detained after the traffic incident. The officer was the officer was treated at a hospital and returned to work less than 2 hours later. I thought that was funny. And this is another dog story, but it's not funny. It's sad. 23 dogs killed by toxic dog food. contaminated dog food, which was sold in 23 states, killed nearly two dozen dogs and sickened 18 more, the FDA said on Friday. The deaths and illnesses sparked an FDA investigation into the pet food made by Diamond Pet Food Company in its Gaston, South Carolina plant. So far, 23 animal deaths have been linked to the pet food. The company in Missouri has issued a recall, now they do, of course, of 19 varieties of dog and cat food on December 21st because some of the pet food made at the facility was discovered to contain aflatoxin. Ew, what is that? A naturally occurring chemical that comes from fungus, sometimes found on corn and other crops, can cause severe liver damage, can cause sluggishness, lack of appetite, and in some cases severe vomiting, fever, and jaundice. Woo, wow. So, but I think Chip is on the phone, is he? Okay. Dog and son, or dog, the dog and son. Anyway, dad and son charged with drug dealing. Pair allegedly sold OxyContin. That was supposed to be about a story about Rush Limbaugh. No, actually, he does not have a son. So, a father and a son were arraigned Thursday on drug trafficking charges after police seized more than 1,000 OxyContin pills from the family home. They pleaded not guilty to charges. They had more than 70,000 worth of addictive painkilling prescription drugs. There you go. The police described the father and son as major drug dealers in the housing complex in Charlestown. The pills were found throughout their home, including the bedroom of Alton Haskam's six-year-old daughter. I mean, probably in the doll or something. That's from some old Steven Seagal movie. So, but anyway, I think we're ready for Chip. No? Maybe not? There we go. Oop. Oh. Ah, here we go. And, oh. And we're joined by Chip from PoliticalSports.com. Chip, are you there, sir?
I am. Thank you for having me tonight.
Well, you got one hell of a good connection on your phone there. You're probably blowing my ears. But I actually appreciate the good connection on the phone. Anyway, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And I love it. How would you think the intro music?
Yeah.
You hear it? That's the Fox Sports, what the hell is it? Score, right?
I couldn't hear you too clearly there.
Uh-oh. It's the Fox Sports score we're playing for you.
Oh, great.
There you go. So anyway, this is Chip. He runs a site called PoliticalSports.com. Now, give everybody a little, in a nutshell, a little synopsis about what your site is about.
Well, I try to take a slightly different perspective on politics and look at it from sort of a team and coaching and strategy and player perspective. You know, who's winning, who's losing, why they're winning, why they're losing, how various teams in the political arena are scoring with their particular constituency or trying to expand that constituency in one way or another. My view of politics is that everybody plays whether they think they are or not. Mm. You know, democracy and everything else is it demands participation, and if you want to get anything out of it or win, you can't help but have to play.
Absolutely. Now I'm on your site right now, and actually have as the Political Sports Fumbler of the Year 2005. I'll let you say who's your Sports Fumbler of the Year.
Well, this year it really wasn't too close. I thought that George, our president, was our fumbler of the year. Whether you're from the right or from the left, I mean, he certainly made many, many mistakes this year, whether it be with the recent wiretap issues. You can look at things with the Hurricane Katrina disaster, and though it might not have specifically been his fault, his policy of appointing people who are not particularly competent in the particular jobs in which he had them certainly led to this disaster. There were a whole number of things that occurred from the huge publicity that surrounded the misleading of us getting involved in Iraq, the secrecy and the outing of Valerie Plame, his stating that he was going to get rid of or fire anybody that had anything to do with the outing of Valerie Plame, and then changing that to anybody who was convicted of a crime, which could take years to happen. I think really hurt him significantly, not only with the American people overall, but even within his own party. So he had, there are numerous things, I can go down a list.
Well, what about this latest thing now? I don't know if you've been listening to the program, but they had the, supposedly the defense is paying clerics now in Iraq to spread the goodwill of the United States. So what do you think about that?
About the clerics doing what with the United States?
Well, it's a story that, it's reported in several international news websites that the United States military apparently is paying these clerics over in Iraq to help them with the, the positive propaganda over there.
Well, I think that that's very true, that the United States has been working with every political faction in Iraq to try to find some way to stabilize the country, whether it be the extremists with the Shiites or the Kurds. I mean, they're trying to build some type of coalition which will allow them to not only get out of the country but stabilize it in some way. I think that they were working with the Shiites from the beginning, and they have, depending on the political fortunes or the winds. I think they also worked with the Sunnis and were trying to buy them off at various times. And the first time that they had that problem with Fallujah, where they left Fallujah to the Sunnis, was indicated that they had been working with the Sunnis and said, okay, we're going to leave you alone. And at that time, there were a lot of issues going on with the Shiites, and they were showing the Shiites that, hey, you guys better wake up, because we'll start to negotiate with the Sunnis in this whole mess. So the United States, I think, has been playing every conceivable card that they can with every political element, including the extreme Shiite fundamentalists that are in the country.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, all this. Everybody says, "Oh, this has gone on before," but now we're hearing about all this because somebody's talking. Because this thing with the clerics, it was in the International Herald Tribune, which is a New York Times international newspaper. That's sooner or later that's going to blow up in the United States too. I mean, so many of these things, they put them in the paper there, and it comes, pops up here on CNN. But I mean, it's amazing. I actually want to skip around a little bit. You have your political sports MVP of 2005. You put the Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yes, I did.
There you go.
I did that just because of the tremendous work that the two of them did with the tsunami relief and also Hurricane Katrina relief. They both worked very closely with, in the case of the tsunami relief, on international relief efforts, governments and private organizations like the Red Cross or Oxfam and AmeriCares and all of them, and it has been the single most successful relief effort in the history of the world, I believe, and a lot of that has to do with the two of them going over there and working tirelessly to try and get this thing to work and to get people to actually give money and more than pledge it. They did the same thing down on the Gulf Coast and have been working together, and it turns out that the two of them have been getting along famously, which is quite a surprise given the past history, and quite a, I think, a tribute more to our current president's father than actually Bill. I mean, because George I lost, and I think he felt pretty badly about that. For him to sort of swallow his pride and work with Bill Clinton is quite a personal feat.
Oh, absolutely, I mean, especially with the everything that's Clinton and all that, and the impeachment and all that. So I'm sure HW had to swallow his pride, and I don't know about his pride, but he said in some interview, I think it was Larry King, that once you lose an election, once election's over, you can't hold a grudge against the guy forever. I mean, he beat you. What are you gonna do? Can't hold a grudge against him for the rest of your life?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that also something comes into play is, Clinton has, over the past year, has worked extremely hard on AIDS programs in the third world, especially in Africa. And it got, at the recent Clinton Global Initiative, he had over $2 billion pledged by different organizations to help with AIDS efforts throughout Africa. you know, the two of them have been doing really great things. And that's not to say that other people haven't, but I think that they've really done some very magnificent things, and they have worked from both sides of the aisle throughout the world to do everything they can to try to solve some real serious problems. So, that's why I gave them the award.
Yeah, well, probably 2006 is going to be the luckiest woman alive is going to be Hillary Clinton, because what's-her-name, Pirro, dropped out of the Senate race now, giving Hillary a clear shot at re-election, and also, you know, propelling her, the odds of her running for president now, because they thought Pirro would get in there and bloody up Hillary, so Hillary went, you know, either she'd run and wouldn't stand much of a chance, because Pirro would have beaten her up pretty bad in the election, you know, or Hillary would just be sick of it and not want to run. But now, with her out of the way, gives Hillary a clear shot at the Democratic Party nod in 2008.
Well, it does, but I think that there was an awful lot going on besides that with the Pirro situation. Specifically, I think that she had ambitions. She has huge ambitions, and wants to run for Senate, wants to go to Congress. But the Republican Party, I think, in the state, thought that she could not beat Hillary, and they didn't want to go to the trouble of trying to raise a tremendous amount of money and put a lot of effort into backing her to see it go down the drain. I think that they looked at her going into the attorney general's position as being a safer bet. It would cost them less money and would position her a lot better for the next election, not necessarily this election. Hillary, I think everybody in New York figured, was unbeatable, at least the power brokers. And Pirro was moving a little too fast for anybody's liking, and I think that her personal ambition got ahead of what the party actually wanted her to do. I think they look at her as being a potentially strong national candidate, but that it was just a little too early.
Yeah, and also...
You know, if you're going to go to the trouble of raising, you know, $50-60 million, you want to make sure it's going to work. And I'm sure that the Republicans were a little bit apprehensive about that.
Yeah. And then also, I got your little talking points. You want to talk about Iran and North Korea? Where are they going?
Yeah, I think that, you know, these issues people look at and they kind of glance over them, but I think that they have huge implications for the United States, and it's interesting from my standpoint to look at how they've been depicted in the media. If we look first at North Korea and everything that one reads in Western press, is that the North Koreans have been close to making some kind of agreement and have been delaying or reneging or been using a number of different tactics and backing out of making some type of agreement with the United States and the West regarding nuclear power. I just pose a question and say, why would North Korea ever agree to give up their nuclear weapons when we're dealing with an individual, not necessarily a government or a country, but an individual who's a megalomaniac?
Oh, yeah.
This man could care less about any single person in his country. They're dying of starvation. He doesn't care. He only cares that he's worshipped as a god. And this man wants to be a player in the world stage. He wants to be a player in Asia. And the only way that he can be a player is if he has those nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
If he gives them up, he's nothing. But if he has them, he has to be taken into account in almost every transaction, and by that I mean whether it's economic trade agreements or military or whatever it is in that region, people have to put him at the table. He wants to be a player.
Yeah.
He wants to play poker. If he doesn't have those nuclear weapons, he's worse than a third-rate country. They aren't going to pay any attention to him.
Oh, no, because, you know, like you said, there's stories of the people of there starving and everything else. They don't have power.
Oh, yeah.
Half the lights are flickering on and off at night, and they're hoping that, a few years ago, he riled up again, and I think Clinton made some deal where he gave him helped him with their energy and give him some food and everything else. So I don't know if Bush can do the same thing. What can the United States offer, or the world community, what can they offer North Korea for them to back off of these nuclear weapons?
Yeah, they aren't interested, really. Yeah. You know, at first they said they wanted two new nuclear light water reactors, mm-hmm. but as a physical fact, the power grid in North Korea cannot even handle one nuclear reactor. It would have to be 10 times the size of what it currently is to be able to utilize a light water nuclear reactor, and they were in the process of building two of them before the United States stopped construction. I don't think it was the United States. I think the South Koreans or the Japanese were in there building them sort of for the Americans as a result of this agreement.
Mm.
So, you know, the North Koreans don't want to give this up. They want the nuclear weapons. Mm. And if we change that or move over to the Iranians in this whole issue with the nuclear issue with Iran, one can ask the same thing. If you're looking at it from an Iranian standpoint, their team, as opposed to our team, why would they want to give up nuclear weapons? Mm. Why would they want to be second to the United States? Why would they, you know, essentially do what the United States wants? If I was an Iranian, I would say, well, screw you. Why should I not have nuclear weapons myself? Mm. And they certainly don't care about economic sanctions.
No.
They have money.
Well, you got that kook who's running that country. He's saying that, you know, Israel should be knocked off the face of the earth or whatever that was and move Israel to Alaska. I mean, the guy's just like off his rocker, huh?
Well, I don't know. One can say that, but look at it again from his standpoint. You know, who is he? Who are those statements being directed toward?
United States,
aren't being directed toward the West.
No.
They're being directed toward disaffected youth in the Middle East, of which there are millions. And there is no legitimate government that is appealing to those young the way that this guy is. Of course, you have terrorist organizations that are living up in the hills, but no country that has a military, no country that has potentially has nuclear weapons, that is saying to the West, look, you guys, get the hell out of here. Mm. You know, 50 years ago, stuck this country into our land, and we have never agreed to that. So why should we agree to it now?
Mm.
You know, and he's talking to these disaffected youth and people who are angry and have no future and saying, follow me, because why should we follow those guys?
That's true.
You know, he's offering an alternative that nobody else is, and he's providing them with essentially a team to fight against the opponent.
Mm.
We're the good guys, and they're the bad guys. And he's, you know, able to coalesce that sentiment in a way that a loose terrorist organization can't.
Interesting. And then also you want to talk about the spy scandal. This thing's, I think, going to blow up this year with Bush and the Democrats and the slippery slope that we're on with that, huh?
Oh, yeah. I think it's pretty interesting. After 9/11... everybody was giving Bush a pass to essentially do anything that he wanted, and I think this was across the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, and everybody realized that we had a real problem, and they probably closed their eyes in a lot of ways. But now that there have been all these problems in Iraq, people are having a lot of second thoughts, and there have been so many disasters with how the government has administered not only the terrorist issues, but the war, and there's been so much secrecy that's gone on that people are getting really upset.
Well, yeah, and then we have the mix that in with this Abramoff business, and this is 2006. You got a midterm election right now,
absolutely.
You got the Congress up for re-election, and all this. I don't know. I mean, all this is breaking pretty good for the Democrats, I'd say, about now, huh?
Well, if they're smart about it, We still have a bit of time, and a lot of the Republicans are trying to distance themselves from Bush.
Mm-hmm.
It remains to be seen how many of them are going to get caught up in the Abramoff scandal here. Obviously, some of them, I think, are going to be seriously hurt by it. But there are a lot of people that started to pull away from Bush over the past couple of months in various legislation that was going through Congress. And they were doing it all, you know, just to save themselves, because then they could say to their constituency that they did not agree with Bush on whether a Supreme Court justice nomination or a bill that went through Congress. Mm. So, you know, they're starting to, you know, not fall in line. You know, they're questioning a lot more than they were before, which is a really interesting in light of the spy or the wiretap issues, because one can certainly see how Bush, given the penchant for secrecy that White House has, that they would say, well, look, you know, these guys are making all these various phone calls. We've got to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there might have been there's a lot of wiggle room in those laws.
Yeah.
And they would say, look, if we take this back to Congress, we're going to have to admit what we're trying to do. And that would, then you could say, well, maybe Al-Qaeda actually has people that are watching all the legislation that's going on and is tracking stuff like this to say, oh, well, look, they're going to pass laws to look at X, Y, and Z, so we're going to have to be careful about how we're communicating in those particular areas.
Now,
they didn't want to talk about that.
Now, do you think Al-Qaeda is sitting there watching C-SPAN and watching the Congress pass laws? I mean, I don't know.
They are not stupid people,
yeah,
and
that's
I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, if I would, it's all over the airwaves,
yeah.
You know, and they can go
CNN.
And they could have somebody in Washington reading the newspapers, going up on these blogs, going in and checking congressional records. It's not that difficult to do. You don't need that many people to do it.
True.
And
well, I mean,
there are a lot of people that are interested.
Yeah, this you know, wiretap business, it may be, you know, proper and legal, but just the perception of it is like they did this in secret, you know, and the idea that they're, you know, tapping phone calls without, you know, they're sneaking around doing it. If the American people see this, they feel like Nixon all over again, like they're sneaking around.
Well, absolutely. There's no question. And if the Republicans, if the shoe was on the other foot, the Republicans certainly would not be supporting a Democratic president who was doing this sort
yeah.
of thing. And there, again, we're getting into team play. You know,
yeah.
they'll support him no matter what. And I think that Bush probably figured that he wasn't going to get any support from the Democrats. And he might not at first get support from the Republicans, but further down the road, I think that they'll all, or most of them, are going to fall in line and support him, because that's what a team does.
Yeah.
You know, you support your leader, you support your quarterback, you support the coach.
Mm.
You do what he says, or you're going to get screwed in the long run.
Now, speaking of, you're back on the sports team. Now, what do you think of the Democrats now? We're moving to 06. You know, some of the races now, with all this brewing up, you know, they said, you know, at the end of last year, that most of these seats in the Congress were safe because they're in, the incumbents, and it's, you know, written, but now with all this spy business, you got this thing with the clerics. You got this Abramoff business. All this is rolling along, and they said, I've read some story, read it could create a tsunami in Washington. It'll wash out a lot of these Republicans.
It certainly could,
yeah.
And again, it's going to depend on what type of game plan the Democrats put together and how closely they stay on that game plan.
I think the Democrats got to fire their coach, first of all.
Well, I don't know. You know, who is their coach?
Howard Dean.
Dean has certainly done some things that the media says are bad, but
yes.
He's been on the mark with most of the things that he's said, though some of it has been controversial.
Yes.
It hasn't necessarily been incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been politically incorrect, perhaps.
Yeah. And the way he said it, too. And the
terminology
he used, that we're not going to win this war in Iraq, right? I think he meant we're not going to win this war, you know, this war on terrorism, because like he said, there's no head of state of terrorism. It's going to come and sign the armistice with Bush, you know?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, the whole issue with Iraq, too, I want to just touch on very briefly while we have a little bit of time,
nice.
Is also very interesting. This whole weapons of mass destruction issue, I think, was very much a strategic ploy or play. I think that before the United States went into Iraq, there was some consensus after Afghanistan among most people in Congress that the United States had to do something else. The question was, at the time, what were they going to do? And if you look at the whole Middle East, which was the hotbed and the growing ground of terrorism, I think that the United States looked at this strategically and said, irrespective of Saddam Hussein, they said, look, if we go into Iraq, we're going to have a huge army that's going to be right on the border of Iran. We're going to be right on the border of Saudi Arabia, which we really can't invade, though it's the birthplace of a lot of these terrorists. What we really want to do is pressure the House of Saud to change their internal policies and squash down on these extremists. So if we're right next door with a huge army, they might do something. I think the Syrians would be pressured to do something about Lebanon, which actually happened. And then Gaddafi would be a little bit nervous about his own political standing and change his tune, which he did. And it could really initiate a change throughout the Middle East. So they used the weapons of mass destruction as a selling point to the American public, mm-hmm. because they couldn't tell the American public, look, we're going in there for all of these other geopolitical reasons.
Yeah.
'Cause the
American people wouldn't understand it.
And I think that the Democrats knew this as clearly as the Republicans, and they went along with it. And the weapons of mass destruction issue was a political tactic used by the Bush administration to sell it. Mm-hmm. Now that things have backfired, the Democrats are using that same thing to attack Bush,
yeah.
when they probably knew before they went in why it was being used by the Bush administration. So for them to say, and even Murtha, to come up and start screaming about all this stuff is pretty ridiculous. You know, it's all political gamesmanship to see, you know, where we're going to end up.
Yeah. Well, that's how it all is in Washington. But who knows where we're going to go this year. But anyway, Chip, thank you for being on the program at the end of our segment with you.
Oh, this has been great.
Very good. Very good. We hope to have you on again very soon. I enjoyed it greatly.
Well, thank you, and I hope you guys, everybody listening, has a great new year, and stop by my website sometime, look it over, and send me some suggestions if you do, or participate in any of the commentary.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And that was Chip from PoliticalSports.com with our new political sports political discussion. That was nice, a little different than the. I like Justin from Donovan Fine, but this is a little different, a little more sport, sports analogy with politics. It makes it a little different, than the humdrum of the damn Democrats and those damn Republicans and damn Bush and damn Kerry and all of them. So, but anyway, and coming up in our second hour will be Matt Sussman from blogcritics.org with we'll delve further into our sports theme tonight. And of course, at the end of the second hour, will be at the last half hour, will be Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica. And so I enjoyed that greatly. So I'll have to bring him back, huh? And we'll take a break now, huh? All right. And stay tuned for the second hour. We'll be back in just a moment. Thank you.
Truck on. Well, you're on TV. that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. The Cylons are always around for a little New Year's cheer here on the program. And like I say, at the end of the program, and there you go, Kitty Sackhoff will be on. But right now we'll be joined by Matt Sussman from blogcritics.org with a little intro music. There you go, keeping up with our sports theme here on Subject to Discussion live on LVRocks.com. I figured, what the hell, if Papa Joe can do it, hell, I can do it. And anyway, Matt Sussman, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
There you go. A little Fox Sports intro music for you. That's a running theme of the program today.
Hey, I appreciate it.
No problem. We welcome you to the program.
Thank you.
And now you're the sports editor at Blog Critics. Is that correct?
So they tell me.
Very good. And I've seen some of your comments there on the board. Very good. Very good. And now you want to talk about what, Ohio State being Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl?
Yeah, I do. Now, since I live in Ohio, it's kind of a big deal that when any time Ohio State wins. But they won the Fiesta Bowl last night, 34-20, mm-hmm. over Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And I think Ohio State can get used to winning this Fiesta Bowl because it's the third time they've won it in the last 4 years.
Really?
Yeah, so I think they just kind of have a private charter that goes there or something from now on. But 3 years ago, they won the national championship in the Fiesta Bowl against Miami. It was a great game and all that. But I was just really impressed with Ohio State. Because they did, well, the two things you're supposed to do, they scored points and they stopped the other team from scoring points.
Well, especially when the other team is Notre Dame. I mean, you know, it's pretty good to shut down that program, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that, again, Notre Dame is always a great team, especially mm-hmm. this year with Brady Quinn, their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the Ohio State defense was able to stop them because it was the first game all year that Brady Quinn didn't throw a passing touchdown.
Mm-hmm. There you
go. All of Notre Dame's touchdowns were running plays, so they let him run the ball, and they sacked Brady Quinn season-high 5 times, which is impressive as well.
Now, you also have a little bit of news here that A.J. Hawk, the OSU linebacker, is dating the sister of Notre Dame quarterback Brady Quinn, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was fun to watch. Mm. They sort of found out about that in December after they announced who was going to play each other. And that's A.J. Hawk actually sacked Brady Quinn twice.
Really?
Which, I don't know, that's about as emasculating as it can get.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, you're Brady Quinn and your potential brother-in-law is putting you on your back about as frequently as he's doing with his sister.
Yeah, uh-oh.
But,
he's nailing both of them. What are you talking about?
Yeah, spend a lot of time getting to know the family.
Intimately, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and then, her sister was in the stands. She was wearing one of those half-and-half jerseys. One half was Notre Dame.
Oh, yes.
One half was Ohio State.
Yeah, she was pretty hot-looking, huh?
Well, it's a toss-up. I've heard some good reviews and some bad reviews.
of the girl?
Depending on who you ask.
Oh, really?
And, you know, they were talking to her during the game, and I guess she sort of got sort of protective of her brother.
Uh-oh.
After he got sacked.
Uh-oh.
Because it's her little brother, and she wants to look out for him.
Well, I mean, hey, you know, you got to do your job, you know what I'm saying? You can't let him throw that pass, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And then also you want to talk about the Orange Bowl. Now, it's Penn State and then Florida State, correct?
Yeah, that game's actually going on right now. It's not over.
What's the score?
It's, let's see, 14-13 Penn State. It's a lot closer than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
Because Penn State is number 3 in the country, and Florida State is number 22.
Yeah.
So, you know, both of those guys, the coaches, Joe Paterno is 79 years old, Bobby Bowden's 76 years old, so...
Yeah, it's like the Wheelchair Wrestling Federation, you know? It's
the
like, you
AARP
know, WCW.
Bowl, I think, is what they're playing in.
Yeah, but, the Geritol Bowl you should be talking about, you know? Depends-a-mania or something like that, you know?
they're just both at the top of their games. They're the number 1 and 2 winningest coaches in college football. They've got over, like, 700 wins or something between both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a close game. It's fun to watch.
Yeah. And then it was about the Rose Bowl. You got USC number 1 and versus Texas number 2.
Yeah, that's tomorrow night. That's the game everyone's pretty much talking about for the national championship. They're the only two teams that haven't lost, so the BCS got it right this year. Mm-hmm. And USC is the defending champion. They won last year, and they didn't lose all last year either.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to win their 35th straight game in a row, which is just amazing. Hmm. But I don't know. Texas is depending on who you ask, you know, either Texas is going to win or USC is going to win. There's really not too much of a favorite in this game, and to be honest, I don't really know who's going to win
either. Well, I mean, USC's got the two Heisman Trophy winners.
They've got a quarterback and a running back. Yeah, so that's going to be a lot for the Texas defense to handle, but you know.
And plus, USC's on a tear too. They haven't lost a game in what 2 years?
It's been about 2 years. They haven't lost any this year, haven't lost any last year, and the year before that they lost one game.
Really? And then you want to talk about the NFL playoffs. So you got the AFC, you got the Steelers at the Bengals, and the Patriots at the Jaguars. The winners will play the Colts and the Broncos, huh?
Yeah, the way that works is that this weekend is the sort of what they call the wild card weekend, where the four worst teams in the playoffs play each other, and then the Colts and the Broncos each have a first round bye because they had the best records. So the Steelers are going to play the Bengals, and I actually miswrote that. The Jaguars are going to the Patriots.
And the Steelers are favored on the road.
Oh, the Steelers. So I see the Steelers might just defeat the Bengals, huh?
Well, I think that's very possible, especially because, you know, the Bengals lost their last two games. They lost Sunday horribly, like 30-3 or something. So they're kind of limping into the playoffs.
They lost,
meanwhile, the Steelers, they just snuck in, and they're coming off a win. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers won. In fact, if I had to put money on it, you know, which I don't.
Well,
I could put money on it for you here in Vegas.
Last week wasn't the shocker. The Bengals lost at KC 37-3, I believe. 37-3, 37-7, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was something like that.
But the week before that was the shocker when they played at home against Buffalo, and they lost 37-27. Yeah. How do you get 37 points to Buffalo? I don't care if the game means nothing.
I think they were confident. I don't think it's a position that since he's been in, you know, we're at the top. We don't really have anything too much to play for, and you just kind of have a letdown.
Well, that's the biggest question mark with the Bengals is experience.
Yeah.
Do they have playoff experience? No, they don't.
So, what about the NFC now? You got the Bears got a bye for this week. But I mean, I'm from Chicago. Of course, the winning fever is catching. You know, because the White Sox, of course, won the World Series. Now the Bears. Anything? You think they're on a roll?
Well, they certainly are. I don't know what kind of winning streak they're on. I think they lost to the Steelers a couple weeks ago. But they're playing strong. That defense they're just not giving up any points whatsoever.
Yeah. Plus, don't they have a home field advantage too?
I think the Seahawks have outright home field advantage.
Oh.
But the Bears will play the first after the bye week. They'll play their first game at home, whoever it'll be.
It's cold in Chicago in January, I gotta tell you.
I don't think it's much warmer in Seattle either.
Don't they have the dome? Aren't they playing in a dome in Seattle? No,
where are they playing? No.
Oh, they got the retractable. Don't they have
it's open.
Oh, it's the Mariners got the retractable. All right.
See, and the funny thing is, I think they've only played one game where it's actually rained.
Really?
Wow,
it'll be snowing in Chicago probably, huh? Now we think it's the Super Bowl. What do you think? The Bears stand a chance of going to the Super Bowl or what?
I think they have a chance.
Really?
I can't say no, they won't. I think it's kind of premature to write them in, even though the NFC is kind of weak, but. I don't know. Rex Grossman's their quarterback, and he's won like five games his entire career or something.
Yeah.
He hasn't. I mean, he's been injured for a lot, and he hasn't played a full season. And it's hard to say. Yeah, the Bears will win with that kind of a quarterback. But I think it's a smart bet. If you were to say the Bears will go to the Super Bowl, I think they could.
Really? Now, I tell you, if the Bears go to the Super Bowl within months after the White Sox win the World Series, the city will go. This Chicago will blow up. You know what I'm saying?
I think if the Blackhawks somehow win the Stanley Cup, I think
that's never going to happen. I'm telling you,
they stand
much chance as the Cubs win the World Series. I'm telling you. Yeah. Well, maybe
I don't know if they could ever do that.
But, it's good. I'll bring it out next week now. No, years ago when I lived in Chicago, when the White Sox went to the playoffs in 84, it caught. Because, you know, 83 was the White Sox, 84 the Cubs went to the playoffs, and 85 is when the Bears won the Super Bowl. So I think this winning fever in the city is you know, contagious, I think. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I really think they used up a lot of their mojo during the 90s with Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So they sort of had to pay the price next couple years with pretty much all of their teams.
I don't know. Well, actually, because you want to talk about the baseball, the offseason moves. You know, you said that here the White Sox stayed the same. Well, they've added who the hell they add? What's his name now? They've added a pitcher, right? They traded and they got Tomey, right?
Yeah, they got they traded for Jim Tomey, which, you know, who knows what that's worth. He was injured, know. They traded for Javi Vasquez.
There you go. Yeah.
And but they gave away Orlando Hernandez, El Duque.
Yeah, and he's the one that they kept on the playoff roster, and he's the one that won that game for him. But I don't know. I mean,
it's hard to tell. I mean, Vasquez is more of a starter, and he gets a lot of strikeouts, and he didn't do so well for the Yankees. You know, it might help him. It's sort of an even trade for both both teams, for the White Sox and the Diamondbacks.
Really? And then they just re-signed John Garland, too, so he's going to stick around for like 3 years, right? And Canerco's sticking around.
Signed him. Canerco was the big one.
Yes.
We're re-signing him. That's sort of the heart and soul of their offense.
Absolutely.
If they couldn't have gotten him, that was like if the Red Sox weren't able to sign Jason Veritek last year after the World Series.
Yeah, they'd be finished, you know. And then they let Thomas go. No big loss there because he's been. I said years ago, like 3 or 4 years ago, they should have got rid of him when they can get something for him. You know, get some pitching or you know, something else, or get a shortstop. But they kept him. But I mean, he's got his World Series ring. And, you know, I can't see him coming back and being unless they sign him to a real cheap contract. You know.
I think he will. I think he'll find a team somewhere. Yeah. I mean, some American League team is going to need a DH. There's a market for him.
Oakland.
And he'll obviously sign a very small contract for someone. I don't know if he's signed anywhere, but they're talking about it.
Yeah. And then you want to talk about the New York Mets made some big moves now. What moves? I haven't been following the Mets. I'm sorry. I've been following the White Sox, but what have the Mets done?
It's all right. Well, let's see. Mets. They signed Billy Wagner. From the Phillies, that was a huge deal. They traded with the Marlins for Carlos Delgado and Paul Loduca. So that's a first baseman and a catcher. So Mike Piazza's kind of hanging out there. And then they signed Julio Franco, who I think is about 76 years old now.
Is he still around?
he's actually 47 years old.
Wow!
But they signed him to I think a 2-year deal.
How much?
He's 47, but he's playing like he's 27, so. Mm.
What about Ricky Henderson? Mike, he's got to be. How old is he?
He's about that old.
He's
playing in some kind of independent league somewhere on the West Coast. But, he still thinks he can sign for a major league team, and I think he can. But,
really?
You know, only time will tell he will, and he doesn't have much of that time.
Now, about the Blue Jays, you're saying they're throwing lots of money at pitching. Now, baseball's kind of pitching poor. I mean, you got a few teams that are pitching rich, like the White Sox got a lot of pitching. I think with the Brewers got some pitching. The Cub farm system has some pitching, but they don't think they're ready yet. But, I mean, so Blue Jays are, what, they're trying to trade for pitching or what?
Well, they signed two free agents. They signed A.J. Burnett from the Marlins for about $50 million. They signed B.J. Ryan, who's a closer, for like 5 years, $50 million.
Wow.
So they're in that East division with the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So
they got to do something,
They don't want to get beat up. So they're just going to have to throw money at these two young pitchers. They're great pitchers.
Yeah.
But they're not that proven and. You know, who knows? It's been criticized by a lot of people, but I think they want to sort of they don't want to get beat up by the two teams making all the deals.
Yeah.
So they're just trying to keep up with the pace.
Well, yeah, well, that division, I mean, historically, I remember when I was a kid when they sold the two divisions, the American League East was always the hell division. I remember when the White Sox used to do the swing through the Eastern, oh my God, and they just killed them for the rest of the season because they win like 3 games out of 12 or something. They just get slaughtered by the, that's when the Tigers are over there, when the Tigers were strong with Sparky Anderson and the Yankees, the Orioles, all of them just would destroy them. The only team the Sox had any chance against was the Brewers back then, you know?
Yeah.
And then, well, see, and then the Marlins, now that you said they're trading away everyone good, I think they had it, I didn't realize they had anyone left.
Well, they, yeah, like this offseason, they've traded away 7 of their 8 starters. Either traded or they lost them to free agency. Well, the only guy they have left is Miguel Cabrera, who's probably their foundation. But everyone else, like I said, Delgado, Laduca, Mike Lowell, they're all gone, and they've lost, you know, a couple of their pitchers. So they're sort of doing that fire sale they did, like they did back in the
they won the World Series
after they won the World Series then. And then look what they did. They just sort of transformed themselves into a new team, and they won the, you know, they won the World Series again in a few years ago, 2003.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe they know what they're doing with that.
I hope so. And then, of course, the Red Sox were dealt their death blow for their season with losing Johnny Damon to the Yankees, huh?
Those poor guys. Oh. You know, even if you hate the Red Sox, you have to feel sorry for them after, you know, they lose that guy.
I don't know. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, the Red Sox pretty much are left with nothing. They might as well just forfeit the season, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, they don't really have too many outfielders now. And, you know, Manny Ramirez wants a trade, and they're trying to shop him around and get something for him, and there's some rumors that maybe they'll trade him to the Orioles for Miguel Tejada. But you know, I mean, they made a couple moves with they also made a trade with the Marlins, and they got Josh Beckett, the pitcher, and Mike Lowell, who sort of know a thing or two about beating the Yankees in the postseason when they did that in the World Series, when Beckett was the MVP of the World Series. So I mean, they have some starting pitching now, which is good. But, yeah, their outfield just, they look so barren. I don't know who their center fielder is going to be.
Now, what about the chat room? The Goof is asking about the Detroit Tigers. Do you see them picking up anybody?
I don't think they will, and I'm glad they asked me about the Tigers because I live, you know, an hour away from Detroit.
Ah.
So, but.
Really? Where are you at?
I live just in Northwest Ohio.
Oh, really?
Yeah, almost right there on the border of Ohio and Michigan.
Ah, very nice, very nice. So we used to have a place up in Grand Haven, Michigan.
Okay, yeah. I know where that is. It's like over on Lake Michigan. Actually, my cousin lives there.
Oh.
So.
But the Tigers, you don't see them do anything before the...
Yeah, I don't think they will. I mean, they signed Kenny Rogers,
the singer?
Not the gambler, but the... the pitcher that knocked over the cameraman.
Oh, him. Why did they sign him for? That guy is a hack, you know?
Well, I actually thought they were going to sign A.J. Burnett, but in fact, they just decided to get someone sort of old and sort of angry. But I don't think they're going to make any moves. I think they're going to stick with who they have and bring some guys up from AAA who I've seen this year, and I'm kind of impressed with them.
Really?
You know, they got some young center fielders, and you know, I can't think of any other moves they made. They did sign Placido Polanco, which is he's a second baseman who he's got a pretty high batting average, but I don't see him making any moves.
No,
you know, that'll. Well, I don't think they're gonna do too well this year again in the division. But they're young, their pitching's young and is pretty good. They don't have much of a bullpen, but, I'll still root for them.
Yeah. Well, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to touch on the Saints. They're going to continue to play in New Orleans in 2006, despite the rumors they're moved to San Antonio or Los Angeles. So now they have Cruz right now working on the Superdome. So apparently they're going to play a handful of early games away and they're hoping to open up the season at home in November in the Superdome. So
that's
it's
good
important
news for that city because you know that city needs something to root for. Like they said, it especially after the hurricane, they said, you know, the Superdome, we got to tear it down. It's in such bad shape. And then they didn't know what was going to happen. Were they going to move the team to San Antonio, where the owner has a lot of business ties to? Or are they going to move into Los Angeles? Who said they're getting another team? But Now, it's good to see that probably by November they'll start playing games in the Superdome, and I hope that they can that they can sell that game out, even if they got to go on the streets and just give tickets away to fans.
Oh, yeah. I think they'll fill that place up, you know, because they'll be from all over the state, all over the country. Everybody's going to be there for that first game in that Superdome. You know, I think it's important. It gives that city, you know, somewhat, you know, normalcy. You know, bring it back to normal.
Yeah, especially just like after September 11th with the World Series,
yeah,
brought the nation back. I think next year with the Saints, and they have the second draft pick, which, you know, all the experts are saying they'll probably use to draft Matt Leinart.
Really?
So hopefully there's some excitement with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they had a horrible year this year. They won their first game, and, you know, that was good for them, but they finished 3-13, and pretty much every game was an away game for them.
Yeah.
So now, hopefully they'll have at least a better year in terms of in terms of the Saints.
Yeah. Now, before we let go, you want to mention the Steve Carroll briefly?
Steve Carell.
Yeah, Steve. Oh, yeah. Carell. He's a popularity from the Daily Show anchorman with the 40-Year-Old Virgin, and he will appear in a remake of Get Smart. Now, I thought, I thought the guy from, he's the one that does the Colbert Report on Comedy Central? No?
He was on the Daily Show,
yeah.
But Stephen Colbert has his own show now.
Yeah, I thought he was going to play Get Smart.
Which I love, but
yeah.
Steve Carell is, they sort of look alike, though, but Stephen Colbert is the one with the kind of screwy ear.
Yeah, yeah. But you're like, well, that 40-Year-Old Virgin's a popular movie, and then I still can't believe they picked him for the Get Smart. I thought it was the Colbert guy who was going to play Get Smart.
I was on IMDb, and it said Carell, but, man, this guy is just riding a wave of popularity, and, yeah, he's going to be in, Get Smart was before my time, but, I don't know if it's going to be good or not. I'll probably go see it anyways, because the man is... the man's funny.
Yeah, he's
and
funny
he's
as
also
hell.
And this doesn't make any sense to me. He's going to be in a sequel to Bruce Almighty because he was in that movie as well. As Evan Baxter, the sort of the antagonist to Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
The sequel's going to be called Evan Almighty.
Really?
And this is from IMDb. Morgan Freeman's going to be in it as well.
Ah.
And here's what the plot says on IMDb.com. God somehow contacts Evan to build an ark in preparation for a great flood.
Really? That's a little odd.
That's the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard in your life.
Yeah, it's an odd premise. So, but anyway, Matt, we'll let you go. We're at the end of our little segment with you.
Okay.
All right, but thank you very much for being on the program, sir.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Matt Sussman from blogcritics.org with our political sports report and a little sprinkling, as it were, of pop culture with Steve Carell, whatever the hell his name is. And so he's going to be in the Get Smart. Oh, we got our next. Here, let me get it. Con? I think the lady is on the line here, so we'll prepare for this. And it's good. I mean, it's a nice little sports city. Now, that they should get the team back in New Orleans, because now, although the city only has 400,000 residents, it's you need to bring some normalcy back to the city. So I think they give them the sports team, give them the Saints. So I don't know, but they only have 400,000 people in that city. The city used to have 1 million people. So I mean, we'll see what happens with that. So I it's good to see that city come back to normal. I was disappointed they didn't shoot off the fireworks in New Orleans at New Year's Eve because of the fog and everything, but I thought it's good they had a nice celebration, bring the city some sense of normalcy back to the city of New Orleans and everything. So I thought good for them. So we got a lot of bad news going on in this world. We got the mine business, we got the New Orleans business, and we got the spy business. How about some good news with the sports and all that? Give them a distraction. Same thing with the TV. Good shows you want to have a distraction with. So but I think we're ready for Katie Sackler. There you go. There you go, and we're joined by, turn down the music a little bit, Katie Sackhoff, are you with us?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, the band got a little loud there, sorry about that. You got
Well, I remember last time, but I've got to listen extremely carefully.
Oh, no, we updated the technology in the studio, I think. You can hear me better now, can't you?
I can hear you better than I did last time, but last time I was on my cell phone, so.
Oh. No, wait, now, actually, the cell phones, usually it's better with the cell phones, isn't it?
Is
yeah.
It really?
Yeah, it's strange. I don't know if it's because it's, you know, we're in the garden spot of Las Vegas or what, you know, I don't know.
Damn technology.
Yeah, 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 you have this funny thing called the internet, you know what I mean? I hope it lasts, you know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
So, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming back. I mean, last time we talked to you was in August.
Right.
And how's Meatball doing?
He's good. He just had surgery on his foot, and they had to, it was so sad, they had to amputate part of his foot.
Oh,
so.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, it was tough, and he was in the hospital for like 2 months. I think it's the longest I've ever been away from him for like the past 8 years, and I think it was harder on me than what I am.
Oh, wait, what was wrong with his foot? They had to amputate it.
He got some weird infection, and then it turned into a staph infection, and then he got into it in the middle of the night, and he decided to try and, you know, lick it better, and it ended up getting gangrenous, so they had to amputate it.
Really? I'm sorry to hear that. I know how important he is to you. I mean,
yeah, he's my little man, but he's hanging in there, so I'm, you know, thank God.
Well, that's good. I mean, I told you in email, I'm taking care of my sister's dog right now, and she's a little black poodle, and
right.
Oh, my God, she is a piece of work, you know what I'm saying? Because my sister's got her all spoiled. My sister, you know, feeds her the food on a fork.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and then my mother, when she's in at her house, she comes and takes her over to McDonald's, and they give her the little half-naps, and the dog drinks the half-naps out of those little cups.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Yeah.
Well, Meatball's spoiled rotten, but I've had to put him on a diet.
Uh-oh.
And so he's not allowed to have people food anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
No more steak?
None of it. And
oh,
he's really, really livid right now.
And what do you give him now, like Alpo and stuff, or what?
He gets RD, which is like this weight control management food that probably tastes like ass. But, you know, I don't think he knows the difference. But see, that's the problem. You give him steak, and then you pull back to, like, the canned food, and he's like, wait a second, I know what that tastes like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like her. I tried to give her, I bought a Marie Callender's pot pie. I thought, oh, I'll cook it up. and she wouldn't eat it. So I'm like, oh, my God. So I had to go to Wendy's and get the damn single. And
my God.
Yeah, and bring it home. And she ate the single from
That's
Wendy's.
That's hysterical.
Oh, I could tell you stories. I mean, everybody says that when they die, they won't come back as one of the dogs in our family.
Yeah, my dog, he's not as picky. He'll
eat
dirt. So he's just an eating machine. He's like a garbage disposal.
Really? Now, where are you at? You're in L.A. right now?
I'm in L.A., yeah.
Now, how's the rain? Is Noah gone by in his ark yet, or what?
Exactly. He sailed by a couple days ago, asked me to get on, and I was like, no, I'll catch you on the next round. But it's not as bad as it was, what was it, last year this time? It was horrible.
Really?
Absolutely horrible. I had like a river in front of my house. And this year, it's not that bad. I mean, I have a tree that's getting ready to fall down in my backyard, and one of my doors is, like, rotted out now because, like, the water stayed in one area too long.
Really?
Yeah. So
now, you just moved into the house.
Huh?
You just moved into the house.
A year ago,
yeah. Yeah, and then the last time we talked to you, you're still unpacking boxes.
Yeah, you know what's really sad is what? I just finished unpacking, like, a month ago.
Well, well, what the hell, right?
Well, I was gone.
Oh, yeah, you're shooting.
Yeah, it was like the longest that I'd been here was like 3 weeks, I think.
Hmm.
So.
Well, that's cool. Well, I hope this rain stops. You know, like I said, you got the Groper-in-Chief there. He declared it a disaster in California.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Of course, those of us away from California think it's a disaster anyway, but, yeah.
It always is. It always is. But for those of us that live here, it's heaven.
It's heaven. You like it in L.A.?
I do.
Really?
You know, it's one of those places, it's a very weird thing. Like, I leave and I miss it, and I'm here and I hate it.
Really?
So I don't quite know what it is about Los Angeles that's got me roped in.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole Hollywood mystique. You're a major television series star. You must get invited to all the shishi parties and all that.
I do. I don't go.
Oh, how come?
I'm a total dork. I don't like to go out. Like, I'm not a big partier.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather sit at home and, you know, drink a couple bottles of wine with some friends and get rowdy here than go out and deal with, you know, the superficial crazy people.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
it's like New Year's Eve. What'd you do New Year's Eve? You weren't in Vegas, were you?
Oh, my God. You're going to so make fun of me. Why? I sat at home by myself.
Oh, no. You've got to be kidding.
You know, every year that I've gone out in New Year's, it's been such a letdown that this year I decided it was raining, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to rent some movies, get a couple bottles of wine, and hang out. And I had the best time.
Really?
Well, that's good. I was in bed by like 12:05. I watched the ball drop, and then I was like, all right, peace, I'm out.
Now, how about, now, last time you were on, we talked about how the Pope decaying on worldwide TV.
Oh, Jesus,
now, did
right.
you watch Dick Clark, you know, mumble his way through the 30 minutes he was on? That was horrible watching that.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't hard to watch. I thought it was an amazing thing for him to do and to push through and to work through, you know, all the obviously, you know, the pain that he's had to work through and the suffering and having to learn, you know, everything all over again. It was amazing to see. But also, it's also, you know, it seems really weird when you get to a certain age and you know, people that you grew up watching on television start to get old.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Like with my parents, like I have a hard time saying my parents are 60.
Wow.
Because they don't. I don't see them that way. Like they don't look old to me. But 60 just, I think the number seems ancient, but it's not.
Yeah, well, it's like my mother, she's, what is she, 60, whatever, she's 62, I believe, and she just had some, she had a little melanoma on her nose, and she's all sense of how she looks now, because they had to take some skin.
Oh, God, is she okay?
Yeah, they had to take some skin off her forehead, put it on her nose.
Oh,
and,
Jesus.
Yeah, now she's wearing a scarf, like a turban and all that. I'm like, mother, take off the stupid turban.
Like, remove the turban.
Well, she's worried about her looks. I go now, you know, I don't want to say, you know, I go, you're 62 years old. You know, who are you trying to pick up? You know what I mean?
You know, vanity is a very weird thing.
I know.
You know, people can look at you and think that you look absolutely stunning, but you know, you don't, you never look the same you did when you were 18. And so, you know, things start to droop south. And I think that it's hard for women, I think.
Yeah, especially her. She's always been like a glamour puss, especially living in Chicago.
Oh, gosh.
She had a little relationship with the former governor there, too, so we won't get into that. But, but my mother's been in banking and everything else, so, you know, so I want to get into that.
She sounds like a riot.
She's all right, yeah. She's a piece of work, as they say in Chicago.
Oh, shit. You know? She'd probably get along with my mother.
No, it's just when my grandmother was living, you know, everybody used to refer to my grandmother as a bitch, you know, actually to her face.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
I think the one time I called my mother a bitch, I was 13, and she slapped my face so hard, I never did it again.
Absolutely. Yeah, I still, to this day, I've yet to utter a swear word in front of my mother.
Yeah, well, you know. I can't claim to be that, innocent.
Uh-oh. Anyway, now, I've got to get into questions from the people in the chat room because they're roaring at me. But anyway, now, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
My New Year's resolution since I was 16 was has always been to lose weight.
Really? Now, you're in pretty good shape. You know, I so happen to have the, whatever the hell this is, the Battlestar Galactica magazine here with your picture on it. You look pretty good.
You know, I said this from day one. Like, losing weight for me is really difficult. I love to eat. Mm-hmm. And I work out harder than anyone I know, but I love to eat. And it's just a constant struggle for me. Like, I went out today and I ran 7 miles. And it's what I do, but, you know, I sit down and I, you know, eat half a cheesecake. So it's, you know, it's a struggle. So one of these days I'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's like me. My weakness is peanut M&Ms, or now it's the Fanny Farmer melt-away chocolates from Walgreens.
Yeah, anything peanut butter is like
really
my love.
Wow.
Yeah.
I tell you, honestly, when I was a kid, I used to eat a whole jar of peanut butter. I'd open up and get a spoon and start eating it out of the jar.
Oh, my God. I can one-up you. I used to do the peanut butter mixed with powdered sugar.
Oh, man.
And chocolate chips.
Really?
It was like a bowl of, like, I don't know
s'mores
why I'm like, not diabetic.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've overdone the sugar.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting. You know, I can only eat Peter Pan creamy peanut butter, not the damn Jif.
I like the crunchy.
Really? Mm. Oh, well. So we'll never get married then?
Exactly. It would never work.
I'm sorry. You know. But, I know. I got my sights set on, what's her heller's name? Nikki Hilton, because she stayed at the hotel I worked over the weekend.
Oh, Nikki.
So. Yes.
Yeah, she's a cutie.
Yeah. No. And her mother, more likely, probably. No. No. Because she came into where I work. I work in the concierge. And she was so nice and normal. I'm like, how can you be a mother to these two spoiled brats? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, no comment.
Yeah. Well. And actually, they're asking now, looking back at 05, what we think is a defining moment for you?
For me personally or for the character?
For you or the character, or both.
For me, you know, the year just kind of seemed to slide, to just slip by. I was working the entire time, and I really don't have anything that, you know, that I can, you know, put my finger on for me. For the character, like, season two was just, it was an emotional arc for her. We see in season two she just goes through so much. And I think that the fans will be pleasantly surprised at the end of the season that she finds herself with she's given her heart to a man and she trusts him completely and she's finally let down some guards. So it's going to be an interesting place.
Yeah, well, I mean, like for me, the world events like the tsunami and the hurricane, that was kind of defining.
Right.
You know, just because New Year's Eve, I couldn't go up to the Vegas thing, and so I went to Boulder City with a cousin of mine. It was the first night. I remember heard of the first night things
right.
that they have. It's with the carnival, and there's art and everything. So I thought, you know, that was cool, you know?
Right. You know, when you're up in Canada, you're removed from – I felt removed from what happened in Louisiana. It was a hard thing to feel connected to it when we were in a different country. I mean, I had friends there. I have friends that, you know, lost houses and things. And it was a really, really hard thing to see them go through that.
Yeah.
Because if someone came into my house right now and said, you know, grab what you can, leave, because you never get to come back again, I don't know what I would do. I mean, there are so many little things that you take, you know, that you just miss on a daily basis and that you take for granted that you probably would really miss and you can't live without. And, you know, the resilience of the people to come back and you know, do it with grace has been amazing.
Yeah, let's hope so. You know, and then actually another question is now that you're done with season two and heading into season three, are you still planning on traveling back home on the weekends?
I bought a house in Vancouver.
Really?
I did. I did because I wanted another reason to have to be there other than the show. And it's given me something to take pride in and something to go home on the weekends and work in my yard. And it's given Meatball a place to kind of call home when I'm there. And I'm so happy there now that, you know, coming back to L.A. kind of seems like a bore.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. I mean, because when you're first down, you want to go back to L.A. because, you know, Vancouver was a drag, you know.
Right.
But
I still love LA,
you
know. I still call LA home, but I'm settling in Vancouver finally after 3 years.
Well, good for you. I mean, you know, well, cuz what if the show lasts 5 years, you got three more seasons left up there.
Exactly.
Unless they do the Covey business.
The Covey?
Huh? Yeah, the Covey.
I pull the whole show to Los Angeles and then we'll get canceled.
You could pull a whole Star Trek, you know what I mean?
My luck, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be some way they could bring some of this business back to Hollywood. I mean, can they give them, like, tax breaks or bring them to Vegas? You know, we've got studios over here now.
No, I'm thinking, do you think it'll ever, like, as far as, like, a season finale thing, do you think they'll ever make it, like, a two-hour theatrical?
Do you think? Think they'll make go into movies after this?
You know, I think that with what Serenity did, I think that there's a market for it. I don't think it's a huge market. But I think that it's a big enough market that they should give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we've got a great story to tell, and it kind of, passes over the gender, so to speak. Like, it's not necessarily a sci-fi show, even though it really, you know, it is. But so I think that we could pull in some more viewers that way, and I also think that it's a great way to, you know, I think it's the only opportunity where the fans would be able to see it on the big screen, and I think it'd be great.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's a soap opera first, then sci-fi second. You know, really. Think about it. You know, all these storylines keep going. You got the storyline with what the hell is his name? Anders,
it's
right?
It's so true. And we sleep around as much as they do on the soap operas too.
Yeah. Now that's another thing. Now with sci-fi is going to air Passions. Now why don't they bring some of you on Passions for like a limited run, get interest in that show?
You want to know something terrifying?
What?
When I first came to Los Angeles, I auditioned for the role of Charity on Passions, and I got it.
Wow.
And I turned it down.
Really?
Because I didn't want to be on soap operas, and my manager said, if you get one job, one big job in the next, because they wanted me to sign like a 3-year contract or something.
Oh, yeah.
And he said if you get one big job in the next 3 years, it was worth turning it down. And I got like 3.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. What were the other two?
I ended up doing Halloween Resurrection and
That's
The
right.
Education of Max Bickford and The Fearing Mind.
That's right.
So I did 2 television shows and a movie in that 3 years.
Hmm. Well, you made the right choice. I mean, passion.
It was the right choice.
Yeah, because you got to work with Dreyfuss and you got your head cut off in the Halloween movie, right?
Exactly. You know, and when else can I say that I would ever get my head cut off?
That's true. Unless you're in East L.A. Right?
Yeah. Well.
Now, do you have any? Now, what do you think about going on Passions? Because sci-fi is making a big deal of Passions. Yeah, I think it makes sense. Like, you know, I was trying to give you that idea of that Marla Ruzicka story. You know, I mean, did you ever follow through on that?
I didn't.
Oh, man.
No,
I didn't. You got to get the rights to that and make it like a Lifetime movie or something.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Oh.
I just, you know, when I'm working,
yeah.
I'm so in that mode that my mind doesn't even go anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, I mean, you know, somebody says, oh, you shouldn't have said it. I go, no, I mean, it'd be perfect for you because the resemblance is kind of there, and I think it's a story that needs to be told about that girl. You know?
Right.
But anyway, but I mean, go on Passions. Do you think it makes sense? Because
it does.
Yeah.
I mean, have you watched Passions? It's hysterical.
Yeah. I kind of know Juliette Mills, and then I watched it when she was really big on that show. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
It's hysterical. Like my mother is addicted to Passions. In Days of Our Lives, she records them, and then the next morning she watches them when she works out.
There you go.
And it's pretty funny.
Well, really, I mean, they should, because if they're going to air the reruns on Sci-Fi, why not bring a couple of you on for like 2 or 3 weeks and then have you get killed or something on the show, yeah?
Right.
I don't know. And then, do you have any non-BSG projects that you have coming?
I start shooting a movie in 2 weeks. I mean, we're still in the final negotiations,
uh-huh.
but so I'll start that in 2 weeks. And it's called The Last Sentinel, and it's science fiction.
Ah.
It's you know, I had my reservations about doing the character because it's extremely similar to Starbuck.
Really?
And my whole goal was to not do that. And then I looked at it in a different light and said, you know what, how challenging is it to take two characters that are written so similar and make them different?
Yeah.
So I think that I was kind of excited about that. And then I found out that Bokeem Woodbine was in it, and he was in Ray.
Mm-hmm.
So got excited about that. So
congratulations.
Yeah.
Now,
so
is that gonna be cool? Is it gonna be a theatrical movie or?
Yeah, it's theatrical.
Oh, good for you. Good
yeah.
for you.
Yeah, and you know, I'm reading scripts and fielding offers and trying to figure out what's going on and you know trying to figure out if I just don't want a 3-month vacation.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, why not like a guest shot on Law and Order or something like that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
We're figuring it out slowly.
Yeah. Another question is, you mentioned last season that your family was not entirely happy with your career decision to become an actress. How are they adjusting to it now pretty well?
You know, my family still doesn't want me to be an actress.
Wow.
You know, they just, they're extremely proud of me. They've been proud of me from the day I moved here, and they've always had faith in me. But they would like me to be home. You know, they're trying to introduce me to guys that live in Oregon, so I'll move home. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's your parents. They love you, and, you know, they get the whole thing with Hollywood, and, you know, they see the gossip rags and all that.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think that they finally see that I've got my feet in, and they're not worried about me financially and physically, you know, like, you know, getting harmed or getting hurt or anything anymore. But I think that they just, you know, they want me home. I'm, you know.
Yeah. Well, and actually, another question is, in the miniseries, you're put in jail, and then during season 2, Mary and James were put in jail. Now Trisha is in jail with James. What the hell? And any idea who might be next for the singular honor?
I'm trying to figure out who's in jail at the end.
I think Almost goes in there, doesn't he?
I have no idea who goes in jail. I know that Tyrell and Hilo end up in jail.
Yeah, they're in jail
at the end of the season.
Correct.
At the end of 2. And who else is in jail?
I think
someone else has got to be in there at some point. I think, you know, my character should be thrown in there.
Well, you're just in jail in the miniseries.
I'm always in jail.
Yeah.
I'm always in trouble.
I think Richard Hatch should be thrown in jail.
Yeah. Why not?
Or Dirk Benedict. There you go.
That's how we'll put him on the show. We'll just put him in jail the whole time.
Some kind of sweeping the floors or something.
Right, exactly.
Actually, a question. Beer McCreary's work on Galactica has been great. Have you met Beer McCreary?
I have.
Really?
Yeah. He is absolutely... His music is beautiful.
Yeah.
He's an amazing, amazing composer. And I just... he's such a smart guy and younger than you would think.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. He seems older, but the music just feels like it's an older guy making the music. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's his name that did the original series music? Phillips?
Oh, I don't know.
I think his name is whatever. But, wow, I mean, it's interesting.
You know, yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. Now, the question is, does Katie Sackhoff have a theme music that she hums in her head, you know, like Ally McBeal used to do?
Do I have theme music?
Yeah. When you're driving along, do you have a, you know, some kind of, you know, the theme from Galactica? No. No. How about She's a Lady? How about that?
You know, right now I'm listening to such a mix of things in my car. I'm a huge Green Day fan.
Really?
But I'm also listening to Dolly Parton right now.
Dolly Parton?
And Joe Nichols.
Really?
So, like, I've got a little country in me.
Very good.
I love the soundtrack to... Mm-hmm. The Longest Yard.
Okay.
I listen to that when I run.
Really good. Very good. Longest Yard, that was Adam Sandler's movie.
Yeah,
with,
so it's all the rap music.
Yeah, and all the wrestlers are in it and all
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, I used to be in the wrestling business here in Vegas, but
oh, yeah?
I won't go there. The business, obviously, the business folded, or I wouldn't be sitting here.
Right. Well, you know.
Yeah, well.
You're better off.
Well, I don't know about that. somebody named Meatloaf Cat. I don't know who that is. What was your favorite episode of the entire... Oh, well, that's kind of hard to ask. Of the entire show.
Oh, the entire thing so far?
Yeah. I think The Farm. You did some really good work in The Farm.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
I loved The Farm. Yeah. I did love The Farm.
Yeah.
I also love Scar, which is an episode coming up. I don't
oh,
know
really?
What number it is. I love that one because I got to play hungover and drunk like the entire episode. And there's a scene, I think they cut it out, where I fell out of the bed on accident.
Really?
I did it on purpose, but tried to make it look like accident. It was pretty funny.
Now, who was the scene with?
It was by myself.
Oh, really?
I was supposed to wake up all hungover and, like, try and, you know, just get out of bed and go to work. And so I was on the edge of the bed and, like, tucked in with the covers. And I was, like, in my head, I'm thinking, if I pull on this really hard, I'm going to fall out of the bed. And so I yanked on it as hard as I could and, like, hit the floor.
Really?
It was pretty funny.
Well, no, because your scenes in The Farm, because we had you on right before The Farm aired. I mean, those were, I mean, you had to pull out all this stuff. I mean, you know, they said Starbuck was abused. Is it, I mean, because you weren't abused, you had to pull this stuff out of thin air, right?
Right.
Yeah, that must have been brutal. I mean, were you emotionally exhausted after that?
I was extremely exhausted after that episode. I think I actually got sick.
Really?
It's hard, you know, sometimes when you've got to pull emotion out that you've got no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But if, you know, I find that if you think about it enough, you see the pain in it, mm-hmm. even if you can't actually relate to it. You can't. I mean, I can't imagine. I sat there and I tried to think about how would you react if, your mother, if you were 5-6 years old, and your mother was looking at you in the face and breaking your fingers.
Mm.
I mean, I can't imagine the pain and you know the pain that would inflict on you for the rest of your life.
Mm.
And that enough is enough to make you kind of freak out.
Yeah, well, the physical pain, also the mental pain.
Right.
And it's hard to realize this stuff goes on, you know, in everyday life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and a question, does an upcoming episode focus on your missing ovaries?
you know what's weird is I don't think we've ever brought up the ovaries again. I think it's just gone, and we just don't bring it up again. You know, the way that we end the season, I think that I think the audience will agree with me when I say that I think it's coming.
Really?
I think that... You know, where we end the season with Starbuck, it's going to be a topic come season 3.
Now, how does the season ending of 2 compare with the season ending of 1? Yeah, with Adama getting shot. Now, how, don't give anything away, but is it as emotional as the first one?
No.
No, really?
It's not. I don't think it's as. Oh shit!
Uh-oh, what's
sorry,
that?
My phone's going off.
Oh, that's okay.
It's not as shocking.
Hmm.
But I think it's going to be just as cliffhangery.
Wow.
That's not even a word.
Hmm.
But it's gonna keep you wanting more.
Really?
Because you're literally going to look at the end of season 2 and go, holy shit, what the heck just happened?
Yeah. Well, because they USA Today, they gave away some ideas that they're going to, supposedly they're going to reset the clock at the end of the season. And
right.
The Sci-Fi Channel did a double take when they told them what they're going to do at the end of the season. Like, what the hell? You know what I mean? So,
I think we all did.
Really? Well, that's good. I mean, you got to keep the shows fresh. You know, I mean, especially you're in your third season. Usually, a third season, you know, from what I know on TV, it's one of the hardest seasons because the first.
Oh God, I don't know. All my shows have been canceled after one. I wouldn't even know what a third season looks like yet.
Maybe you wake up in the Max Bickford's house and it's all a dream. Galactica was all a dream. No.
Funny enough, I'm going to an event in 2 weeks, and Marsha Gay Harden's going to be there, and I haven't seen her for 6 years, so I'm kind of excited.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. That's just bringing Richard Dreyfuss on Galactica as like a Cylon, and you kill him or something, huh?
I haven't even talked to him for a couple of years.
Really?
I don't know what he's up to.
Well, they're bringing everybody else on, Xena and the guy from Quantum Leap and all that.
I know that. They're bringing everybody on.
Yeah. Where else here? Oh, now a question about the scene with Apollo there with the towel. Now, they noticed you had a smirk on your face. How was that scene seeing Jamie from behind? I cleaned it up.
I gotta tell you, it was probably one of the funnest days I've ever had. Just because, well, for the obvious. And then, like, honestly, like, when Jamie came in and he was like, I'm going to do this, and I was like, you're shitting me, you're going to do this? And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to totally do this. And I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
And so I think that the smirk on my face was probably one of the first takes, because I think I was shocked. I was like, oh, my God, that's Jamie's ass. And then I was like, and then my girl mode took over, and I was like, oh, my God, he's got a nice ass. And then I'm like, oh, my God, stop that. He's married. Stop. And so I think it was a good day. I think the view from the front was a little better though.
I don't know.
That towel got a little low.
I don't know. I mean, what a British limey asses, right? With the flat ass.
They're used to it though. It's the Americans that are so like covered up and shy about that stuff. You know, we're fine blowing somebody's head off on television, but you can't show an ass.
Yeah, well, same thing with this Brokeback Mountain. Yeah, nobody wants to see it because it's a love story between two men. I'm like, oh, come on. You know what I mean? Big deal, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Have you seen that movie yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh,
I don't go to movies.
Oh, that's right.
I wait till they come out, and then I rent them.
Really? But, well, you'd be mobbed by all your hordes of fans.
Oh, right, I'm sure. I actually went to a football game in Kansas City, and the guy in front of me was like, oh, my God, you're Starbucks. And I was like, oh, shit.
Well, that's cool.
And like by the time the football game was over, I think everybody around me knew who I was, and I was like, oh.
Well, they probably put you up on the damn screen. You didn't
see
it.
No, they
did.
I was really excited. I had my sunglasses on and my hat on the whole game.
Now, are you getting noticed more as you go around the country and the world?
Yeah, I do, and it's really interesting too. It's kind of cool, but it's interesting. Like I have people come up to me at dinner, and I'm like, I'm eating dinner. In the middle of a restaurant, you're like, come on. And I feel bad for the person with me because I don't want to be rude also and like be like, I'm sorry, I'm eating dinner. But,
We got to get some disguises and stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
Well, we had Stevie Wonder in the hotel the other day over New Year's, and people were just all over him. As soon as they knew he was in the hotel.
I'm sure.
I'm like, oh, my God. And then Steve Martin was wearing a wig when he was in the hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, because Steve Martin, the white hair, he stands like a sore thumb.
I think that's got to be kind of fun. You're like, what disguise am I going to wear today?
Wear the mustache or wear the dress.
Right, exactly.
So, but anyway, Katie, we'll let you go. We're at the end of the little hour here.
All right, cool.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good, Sean.
All right, very good.
Have a good week.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica with a nice report. That was cool, huh? Yeah, we talked about a little everything, Meatball and the show. You don't want to spoil everything, so I'm trying not to spoil stuff on the show anymore. But she gave us a little sneak peek at the cliffhanger. Sounds like it's going to be a hell of a cliffhanger. Don't forget Sci-Fi is on, or Battlestar Galactica is on. There you go. Very good. Battlestar Galactica is on Friday.